Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello all and welcome to Full Throttle. It's the bike racing podcast from Eurosport. It's Monday the 5th of October already, 2020. And thank you for subscribing and listening to the podcast. We're available on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and others, of course, including the Eurosport website, eurosport.com. Julian Ryder's here, Greg Haynes, that's me. And Julian, we've spent the weekend commentating on MagniCore World Superbikes. Tremendous stuff, and it just goes to show that anything can happen in motorcycle racing. We're going to the last round at Estoril, and it's the first time it goes down to the last round for 4 years. How about that?
I know. Every assumption I made about this weekend was proved completely wrong. Everyone. I've never forgiven MagniCore for taking the Boldore away from Paul Ricard, so I'm prejudiced against the place.
Well, they got it back in the end, didn't they?
It produced excellent racing. The new surface is obviously superb. A good job done by the circuit, to put it mildly. And then the Iceman, Mr. Ray, and his team didn't get it right in that final race.
Well, we'll get into World Superbikes in a second. Let's quickly touch on BSB as well, because we can't ignore the fact that they've been racing on the Grand Prix circuit this weekend at Donington Park. And although there is no six-man shootout, no showdown, there is still a five-man shootout, because it's Brooks, Iden, Glenn Irwin, O'Halloran and Taz McKenzie, 46 points covering them, 75 up for grabs. May the best man win on the Brands Hatch Grand Prix circuit in the middle of October.
I am so glad they aren't doing the shootout. I hated that showdown, shootout, whatever they call it. Really, really disliked it.
Well, we did say the commentary today from MagniCore that you're a bit of a traditionalist when it comes to things like this.
A little bit, yes. Again, you know, I don't like gimmicks in sport. Any sport where you hear the word, oh, and he's playing the Joker, I turn the television off. You know,
But what was nice, of course, is that we had three different manufacturers winning at Donington. Andrew Irwin, the first of the rounds on the Honda. Josh Brooks on the Ducati to make up for that incident he had, of course, when he was taken down earlier in the season by Andrew Irwin. And Taz McKenzie on the Yamaha, another great win for him. Second of the season, of course, after Silverstone. So five men, just running you through those again. Brooks and Iden, the two PBM Ducatis. Glenn Irwin on the Honda, and then the two McCams Yamahas of O'Halloran and McKenzie. So that sets up very nicely indeed. We should say very quickly as well, congratulations to the new British Supersport champion, Mr. Rory Skinner. Yeah. Great recovery, because it's been difficult times over the last few years.
3 years in Red Bull rookies, and so the second year you thought, oh wow, this boy's going places. And it's a vicious game, motorcycle racing, as we know. And he went a bit flatline in the third year and didn't get a job. So, you know, that's, as we keep saying, that wonderful quote from one of the Italian racers, you know, Moto Grand Prix is a train that stops once.
And there have been a few examples of that over the years.
And if you miss that stop, you're in the wilderness.
Just also, thank you very much from Jules and I, MotoGP Jules and Greg Haynes TV on Twitter, for lots of the nice messages we've been receiving. And also, more than that, for the general enthusiasm. Isn't it fantastic, Jules, to see everyone getting so involved and so excited about the championships this year, BSB and World Superbikes? And going back to World Superbikes, you've got to go back to 2016 in Qatar, to the last time it went to the last round. Now, whether it'll go to the last race for the first time since 2014 is another matter. But the fact, of course, it's still very much advantage Jonathan Ray, but you know, anything can happen now, can't it? If he'd got it done this afternoon at Magny-Cours, as we speak here on Sunday evening, if he'd got it done today, it's done then. But now there's just, you know, there's all those uncertainties and variables still in the air, and he's got to drag it out now for another 2 weeks.
And I would have put the mortgage on him stitching it up at one of his favourite tracks this weekend.
It's good you didn't. It's
extremely good I didn't. And, I think the unknowns that were thrown in, the brand new surface and a tyre.
Yes, true. A new wet weather tyre, of course.
Threw in enough variables to confuse even Perry Reber's top world-class crew in the Kawasaki Racing Team pit. Certainly, when you look at what... it took Ducati all weekend. How many times have we said that this year? It took Ducati until Sunday afternoon to understand things. But the Tenkate boys had it nailed, didn't they?
Yes, they very much did, didn't they? And I'll probably get in trouble with Yamaha for saying this, but I'm going to say it because it is my opinion, and I think it's quite clear in the results. Aren't Tenkate embarrassing the factory team again? I know they have some factory support, but let's be honest, they don't have the same electronics. What a superb job. And they've had 2 second places, Julian, in the long feature races. So that's 2 sprint race podiums and 2 long race podiums now.
So, Baz, we're talking a very talented rider. We know this.
Yes.
You know, a man who was pretty impressive in Moto Grand Prix in his time. He's won in, he won in Le Mans, I think, first time he did an endurance race. You know, this he was good as a kid, as really as a kid in BSB. This is a bloke we know.
Yeah, and he won the European Stock 6 Championship at about, what was he, 17 years of age? He's still young now. You think he's getting on in racing terms, don't you? You think he's sort of late 20s, early 30s. Certainly not, mid-20s still.
A top quality rider.
Yeah.
Held back, if anything, by the fact he's 2 meters tall.
Mm. Although, of course, maybe ironically today, that may have helped him, perhaps. You were talking about it in the commentary, the fact he's taller, can shift the center of gravity.
If you're looking for traction, that extra simple matter of the extra weight pressing on the rear tire. Okay, it's a loosely coupled weight. Physicists will say a loosely coupled damping mass. And it just seems to help. Provided you can get lots of other things right, of course. It doesn't help on its own. And I notice Scott Redding saying that he thought something worked against the bigger guys today.
Yeah, I was just watching that interview, but I was inclined to know what, and intrigued to know what you thought about that.
I don't think I can, well, we're not broadcasting, yes. I think probably is the word. but, you know, but I'm not going to call Scott Redding a liar, because there would have been something that wasn't working for him. But Scott did didn't he, about how many variables. He'd never been to Magny-Cours before. He'd obviously never ridden the tyre. So he was thinking, what about the tyre wear? What about, can I press, can't I? So many unknowns he had to deal with.
Yes, and just to read out to all of you what that was, it was a question in the official post-race interviews conducted by Romain Brasseaux, who's one of the two voices we hear doing the World Feed interviews on the TV as well over the weekends, Anthony Nelson the other. But Romain, quite rightly, in our opinion, asked Scott Redding, as Jules was just saying, is being a heavier, larger rider. And of course, it was the three big men of World Superbikes on the podium today. Let's not forget that this afternoon with Redding, Baz and Davis. Romain asked, you know, is it an advantage in conditions like this? And Scott's words were, definitely not. In these conditions, the weight is a disadvantage because you're putting more temperature in the tyre, more load, more stress, more heat, and it means more tyre wear. What also confused me, I have to say, and again, you know, we love Scott Redding, don't you? But it did confuse me. He said, it's like if you have a hot race, the bigger riders suffer more. But I'm thinking back to the hot weather of Jerez when Scott Redding won 2 races. That did confuse me, I have to say. But I think it's all part of the mind games going on here as well between Scott and Jonathan.
Yes. I mean, they're being very civil about it, but working away on it, trying to work away.
Yeah. I mean, we love both of them. We love both of them. And we love the way they're going about the on-track business and the mind games. They're pushing each other to the limit this year. Goodness me, they're pushing Jonathan hard, aren't they?
Has Jonathan ever been pushed harder?
That's a very good question. Now, I've been commentating World Superbikes duels since Jonathan Rea started winning with Kawasaki in 2015, and I would say no. I think mentally he was pushed at the beginning of last year. That was very difficult for them when Bautista was winning everything. Yes. The acceptance, that was so difficult for them to have to get over. But once they did, they just accepted it, didn't they? But to think, you know, we really did think, didn't we, coming into this weekend, it's got away from Reading now. That was the general school of thought, and the points backed it up.
After
and
then, Barcelona.
Just as you think it's, yeah. And just as it's, just as you think it's gone, bang, Reading's back again. And the pressure in some ways is back on Kawasaki. But let's listen into some of these interviews ourselves. Scott Redding and Jonathan Ray, first of all, the two contenders of 2020.
Yeah, it was a crazy race. Mixed conditions, something I didn't really know. You know, it says about your teammate helping you. He beat me also this weekend. So it's one of those things, you know, it's everyone's out for themselves. But it's good to see the guys getting stuck in. And it was nice to win. You know, I just felt like now I can breathe a little bit. Like, you want to race again in a condition I was not most comfortable with. I had to work a lot this weekend, and I was finding it hard because I was kind of always ending in the same place. There was no drive forward until the Super Pole race, where I felt I was fast and there was 2 points I was losing a lot. And I said to the team, if you can sort this, I'm sure I can fight for the win. And they did that, and the bike worked really well. And we managed to really take control of that race. And there was a lot of questions in my head. How long is the tyres going to last? Is the track going to dry up? Are you pushing too hard? You know, like... But in the end, you're in that position where you do everything you can to win and you manage it till the end. And I was very happy to do so. And, yeah, keep alive the championship until Estoril.
What will be your approach heading into the final rounds? Do you still have the championship in mind?
Kind of. It's one of those things. I think Jonathan has more pressure than me in this situation, because in the end it's like... only he can make the mistake. So I go there. Nobody really knows the track. The manufacturers, you know, they've not really tested there, so nobody knows. It'll be interesting who can get up and sort it out fastest to make the maximum points in the race. We'll give everything we can. We will fight to the end. That's what I've always said. You know, I didn't give up this weekend. It was hard, and Jonathan kept taking points from me. But I felt good at the end, and I just worked hard, and that's what I will do until the final race of Estoril.
You were really strong today, coming back on today's races. Do you think that your weight and your size is an advantage into wet condition and the tyre management?
Definitely not. In these conditions, the weight is a disadvantage, because you're putting more temperature in the tyre, more load through the tyre, more stress, more heat means, you know, more tyre wear. It's like if you have a hot race, the bigger riders suffer more. It was just more management, I think, who was willing to take more risks. And I think, you know, I just kind of took those risks. I felt good. I felt comfortable. And I just think the other guys around, you know, Loris is good in those conditions. Chaz seems to be pretty good in those conditions also last year. So I think it's just a feeling, and I'm happy to have that feeling to win.
There was a point where I was thinking, I actually said to my team, you know, there's going to be a flag-to-flag race because the track will dry. So in the beginning, I was quite conservative, looking for wet areas to cool the tyres down. And to be fair, when Scott came past, I was you know, quite happy to let him lead and understand, but I could see straight away I was in difficulties, especially exit T5 and exit the last corner. I had, you know, too much spinning and too much traction control working. And to be honest, that was the story of my race. I just tried to push on my limit, but just control that limit. I had a few moments, so it was kind of fun because I was always being kept awake. I would have a front slide or a rear slide. But yeah, fourth was what we could manage today, and now we move on to Estoril in a few weeks.
Sure. It should be, let's say, a weird sensation for you, not celebrating a championship here in Manicours after 3 years in a row doing it.
Believe me, it's even better. You know, whilst I love Manicours, it would be nice to go somewhere else, you know, and have another magical feeling again. But now we can really allow ourselves to think about being a champion, because it's very close. I have to score more than 3 points or 3 points, which is a great position to be in, entering a last round with three races. It shows the incredible job the Kawasaki racing team have done this year, and we keep pushing. So looking forward to the challenge of learning Estoril as well, because it looks like a really cool layout and one I feel will suit me and my Ninja pretty well.
It's going to be your first time there, your first time racing there, and as you said, a very special weekend. It looks like it will be a very special weekend for you. So your thoughts on this last round of this 2020 season?
Yeah, first was we can allow ourselves to think about it. We still need to get it done. So I'm excited to go somewhere new, but I still need 100% focus and attack every session in the same positive way with my team. And I'm just, it's always exciting as a rider, especially, well, not one as old as me, but, you know, to go somewhere new and experience a new track, new feelings with the bike. And I feel my crew are always, they understand what I need. So we should get on top of the setup pretty quickly and then enjoy the track.
You've got to love it, haven't you, Jules? You've got to love both of them.
As you said, I mean, we are talking two very mentally strong athletes here. They're totally different in the way they approach it, because Jonathan would never want to show any weakness. He didn't in that first half of last season when Bautista was riding all over him. But
yeah, exactly. And then came out at the end of the year, didn't he, and said how hard it
was. And in the interview that I think Charlie Hiscock did with him a couple of races ago, Jonathan was admitting, I was wrecked, I was done. He never showed it.
Yeah.
Scott wears his heart on his sleeve more. And he will say, oh, you know, it's all going to, what am I going to do? Doesn't alter the fact he's as tough as you like when he gets back on track.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I think it's absolutely fantastic, the show they're putting on for us, for the World Superbike Championship. And at the end of the day, we want the race to go down to the last corner, and we want the championship to go down to the last race. They really are putting on a brilliant show, aren't they, this year? Chas Davis, then, great ride for him again. Jonathan Rea, of course, fourth in race two as well for the second round in a row. That's something I've been thinking about this evening. Chas Davis, though, great ride. And, of course, he did his teammate a big favour. Here's Chas.
Yeah, that was awesome. Really enjoyed that one. Felt good for a lot of it, as I did yesterday and as I did in the Superfoal race. Felt really, have been really happy with the bike. I think it's been great all weekend. It's just, you know, in the rain, it's how far are you willing to push? And I was running my weekend with one eye on Vandermark, because we've got a pretty tight battle going on for third in the championship. So when I saw he was in P5, I just tried to put my head down and run a good pace, and I wasn't, you know, trying to do anything over the top to try and run down Scott or Loris or Johnny at that point. But then Johnny started coming back to me, so I had a good target and just started sort of like putting it together really good, and then got on the back of him, passed him and gapped him, and I thought, this is good. It looks like we're going to be on for a podium. And then all of a sudden, I had some, like, quite a big drop in my tyre. And then I could hear Johnny, who was closing me back in again. And I knew the point situation. I knew that it was up for, if he finishes third, then that's championship done. But also, for my point situation, I was kind of thinking that, I mean, if he's going to have a go, then I'm half expecting that he's going to have a big lunge somewhere. So I was thinking that for my points, fourth's better than nothing. But in the end, just kept it, put it together really well on the last lap. You know, made Johnny work for it, and he wasn't able to come by. And yeah, obviously kept the championship alive for Scott, which is a bonus, and got some more points for myself. So yeah, really happy with that. Bike was great today. I want to say thanks to my crew for that. And yeah, let's roll on to Portugal.
As you just say, you scored some good points for you. You managed to increase the gap for third position on the championship standings. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, good. That's the objective coming into this weekend, was just to stretch that gap a little bit. We did that by a few points yesterday, lost a couple in the Super Bowl race, and then gained five back then. So overall, we've extended the gap, which is good. And yeah, we just got to, you know, consolidate this third position now in Estoril. I think we're 19 points up, which is healthy. And I like the look of the Estoril track. So, yeah, I'll be going all out there to consolidate this position.
It's funny, isn't it? Yeah, we're all fully aware, even Chas Davis, of the championship situation and their individual responsibilities for their
team. I noticed Scott mentioned that Chas beat him this weekend as well.
Yeah. So it wasn't like he wasn't, you know, he wasn't helping me all through the weekend, is the sort of message.
No, and that's not, that wasn't in the script. I've no doubt if Chas had been on track, the position was, well, if I don't put a move on him here, that may be a good idea to keep, you know, he would have considered it. I'm not saying he would have done it, but it would have been on his menu not to attack his teammate on track.
Yeah.
But he's going to sit up and look around and wait for him. That's not the way it works.
And of course, as Chas Davies said there as well, very honest of him, although we know the reason why, of course, he's fighting with Michael van der Mark for third in the championship. And let's be honest, there are massive financial bonuses available in most of these riders' contracts to finish in the top three of the championship.
What's Chas doing next year? He's putting his, you know, he's an advert for, hello, come and employ me next year.
And what do you still think now at the end of the weekend? Because no one knows for sure. I mean, he might know. Maybe not, Ducati know. Maybe Honda know.
Though, is he?
No, he's not, is he? Quite rightly, obviously. Why would he? But we hear Leon Haslam's talking with BSB teams. Now, why would he be doing that if he was staying with Honda? Doesn't mean he won't stay with Honda, but they've all got to evaluate their options, haven't they? Could Chas Davies stay with Aruba? We think Rinaldi will be there. Will Chas then just swap with Rinaldi and go 11, which is more or less a factory bike anyway?
A semi-detached factory bike.
In different colours, in disguise. We just don't know for sure, do we? In fact, Chas did mention that. Here's what he said about that at the end of that interview.
I don't know, to be honest, about 2021. Better ask some other people about that one.
You've been racing in Estoril 18 years ago. How do you feel going back onto that track? Are you excited to have another track on the calendar?
Yeah, definitely. I like going to fresh tracks. So Estoril is one that I have been to quite a few times back in the day. And it's a nice little track. It's quite got some interesting points to it. And of course, I think everybody enjoys going to Portugal as well. So no, definitely looking forward to that one. It'll be a nice place to finish up the championship and definitely a welcome addition to the calendar. So.
Indeed, better ask some other people about that one. Anyway, Loris Baz, superb weekend for Loris Baz. He's taken the 150th podium for a French rider on Sunday afternoon. And it was also on Saturday, of course, the first French podium for a Frenchman at Magny-Cours since Ginterly in 2015. Let's listen in to Loris. And of course, that man, Mick Shanley's crew chief, will be saying, I told you so. Here's why.
Really happy. Even more today than yesterday, because this is condition that I usually don't like. I love when it rains, but I don't like the wet track when it's not raining. You know, I'm struggling a lot. And this morning in the Super Bowl, it was this kind of case. I overheat the tire and was struggling a lot. But yeah, hats off and thanks to my team, and especially my crew chief, that gave me the confidence to use the hard rear tire on the grid. And I went for hit. I expected to struggle a lot at the beginning, but was hoping to catch at the end. But at the end, I was really strong from lap one. Just took me a bit of time to overtake the guys. And also had to wait a bit of a feeling for the rear tire, so I didn't know what to expect. But yeah, I managed to come through. Then was behind Johnny until the moment he gave up for a few laps on Scott, because he had a few moments, I overtook him. And yeah, it was hard because I wanted to push to come back on Scott, but in one side, I knew that if I was pushing too much, I was overeating the tire again. So I had to play with that. I really expected Chas to overtake me because he had a really strong pace, but then I think he had more or less the same problem. So yeah, just trying to bring it home. I knew Johnny was behind and he really wanted that title here. So I know it was not over until the last corner, but yeah, really happy to do it at home. Second podium this weekend and in front of some fans that braved the bad weather of Manico. So I would have liked to have the Marseillaise, but Luca did it in the Supersport. So, I cannot complain about two podiums, 40 points, well, more than 40 points. The best lap also, really happy.
How difficult was it to manage the tire conditions? And was it the only struggle you faced during the race to fight with Scott?
Yeah, I think, Scott was just in front from the beginning. So he pulled a gap in the first lap that I never was able to catch. But anyway, I think he had a few tenths in the pocket more than me. And there's nothing to say. I think I had more chance to win yesterday than today. And it was really hard just to manage the rear tire, but also the front, because I said I knew the rear tire was overheating and I tried to push a lot on the front, but then I overheat the front. So it was then trying to calm down, but also I knew behind there was two fast guys. So it was just trying to make no mistake for 21 laps. I remember I watched the board the first time and it was 16 laps yet remaining. So I said, wow, that's going to be long. But yeah, finally I made it. No, didn't do any mistakes. So that's the most important in this kind of races.
Next is Estoril. How do you feel heading into the final round of the season?
I'm sad. I don't want the season to be over yet. But it's been really fast since we restarted in Jerez, and yeah, looking forward to go there to learn a new track. I always love to learn new tracks. I watch the 12 hours. I think it can be a good track for the Yamaha, but also there is a long straight. So I know that, again, Super Pole will be really important to start in front and not having to be in the pack with the fast bike. So we'll see. New challenge for the moment. We're just going to enjoy that one tonight and then trying to focus and train again for a week, ready for the last one.
Well, I suppose, Jules, you could also say maybe if they'd used the tyre in the Super Pole race, would others have done it? Although, you know, for the second race, then again, I'm not sure if anyone else could really make it work because they'd all tried it across practice and the warm-up.
Mick Shanley is a very experienced crew chief and a clever man at his job, a very good man at his job. And motorcycle racers, historically, if there's something new, they want it.
You know,
the fact it...
Like a child at Christmas. Yeah, with a new
it
gadget.
Hasn't been tested. We don't know anything about it on this surface. it might not work. And there's several reasons why a softer tyre, especially for the Tenkate team, as we said in commentary, was probably not going to be a good idea. We've seen Baz suffer at the end of races quite a lot. Because of the level of electronics they have and what they can, more to the point, what they can't do to it in terms of especially traction control tuning, where you don't want a soft tire on the thing. You've probably got to think tire life as a priority. And I'm sure Mick Shanley was thinking about that. He was thinking about the weight of his rider for the reasons Scott Redding explained to us.
or not. Yeah.
You know, let's say Scott Redding's not talking rubbish here, that he's dead right. And of course, both things can be right. It depends on other... It's such a multivariable equation, the setup of a bike, that concentrating on one thing throws everything else out.
And what you've got to love about it as well is that at the middle of all that, is a human with a brain and a beating heart. And that's just glorious, isn't it? You can see what they're doing on the motorcycle. That's one of the best things about bikes in comparison with car racing.
You can see a man at work. If they nearly get flicked over the handlebars at 100 odd miles an hour, the body language is eloquent.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we've had a few of that happening as well, haven't we? Quite a bit of that happening in the classes across the weekend. Best wishes to everybody who suffered injuries. Nothing major, nothing life-threatening whatsoever. Yep. And that's very good. By the way, I was just watching back the race a moment ago, and I noticed just as they cut away to the replay, after Chavi Forres had crashed at the last corner, the marshals successfully managed to drop the bike. So it doesn't rain, never rains, but it pours, quite literally, actually, isn't it, this weekend at Magny-Cours. The independent scrap, of course, it's really hotting up now. Loris Baz having taken more points out of Michael Rubin Rinaldi. Remember, Baz led it earlier in the year. Rinaldi came really strong at Aragon in particular. That's going to go down to the wire at Estoril. Michael van der Mark.
Disappointing.
Yeah, a bit disappointed on the podium in the sprint race again, just as he did at Barcelona. In fact, let's listen. Here's Michael van der Mark.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, a bit disappointed with race two. This morning I finished third, so I was really happy front row. And my start was okay, but to be honest, I struggled with the grip in the early phase of the race. And I was really quick, but I lost a lot around turn 8, 9 and 10. Where everybody was so much stronger, so I lost too much time there, and it was a bit of a lonely race. But at the end, I must be happy with the points I scored. Yesterday, I threw away a lot of important points. So, shame I couldn't find a grip in that area to fight with the boys. But I think third place is still kind of alive, and we have to fight really hard in Estoril.
This morning, you managed to get a podium position. Were the condition better for you this morning?
Yeah, this morning I had such a good feeling with the track was a bit wetter, but I was struggling a bit with the first opening of the throttle this morning, and that's why I couldn't really fight with the others. But to finish third in support, it was really good, and really happy with it, and I thought we could improve the bike even more for the second race. So we didn't do it, but we must be happy.
You said your hopes for third place in the championship are still alive. What would be your approach heading into the final round?
Yeah, it's going to be a difficult round. I'm looking forward to going to Estoril. It will be my first time there, but you know, it's going to be the last weekend with Yamaha, so I want to do everything we can to finish third on the championship. And I think I just want to win and have a really impressive and a massive thank you to Yamaha in my last race.
Yeah, so obviously wanting to go out on a high, of course, he's moving to BMW next year, and we will talk about BMW this year in a moment. But VDM there, Jules, just saying losing lots of grip, as we heard, out of turns 8, 9 and 10. So that's 180, the left-hander, isn't it? And the kink.
Yeah.
Where it was quite bumpy, even on the new surface. So a nice, honest interview there. But you know, the Yamaha, we came into the weekend saying it's a nice nimble motorcycle. It can change direction very quickly. And we thought that's the strength of the bike. Toprak's been hurt, of course, and injured from the Barcelona warm-up crash. But Gerloff and Baz have impressed more than the Pata team, haven't they, quite frankly, this weekend?
Yes, although Gerloff was obviously detuned by the first race. And was also, we understand, he wasn't sanctioned for the crash because it was a racing incident, as everybody agreed. But he was also given a little bit of a finger wag and told, hey, watch your step, son.
Well, what we're hearing from some of our colleagues who we work with in the paddock is that Gerloff was said, please go and apologise to Eugene Laverty and Tom Sykes, which in a way I have to say is a bit confusing because the stewards panel didn't give him a penalty. So they've put it down as a racing incident, but asked him to go and apologise anyway. I don't know what your take is on that one. I mean, he didn't do it on purpose, did he? It was his fault what happened at turn one in race one.
Shaky Byrne in the studio, in the Don said, what's all the fuss about? It was a racing incident.
Yeah, because he was unsighted by John. I mean, Gerloff himself was up on the curb on the inside, wasn't he? Jonathan Ray was on his right, and all of a sudden, Sykes is there, bit of contact.
It was a racing incident. If it was Speedway, you'd call it first turn bunching. You know, it was nothing compared, in my opinion, to what Vandermark did at Barcelona.
Well, you could say that was even worse, couldn't you? Because he completely missed the breaking point at turn one there and almost wiped his teammate out. And in many ways, it spoiled the race, actually, didn't it, from a neutral point of view?
It split. It happened in the Grand Prix at Misano to Dovizioso.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And that one, oddly enough, was caused unintentionally by his teammate, wasn't it? But it was just the domino effect where Petrucci had a moment, Zarco sort of got distracted and then took himself and Dobby
down. I mean, you cannot but feel sorry for Tom Sykes and Eugene Laverty, who did nothing at all wrong.
Because it was terrible, wasn't it, from a 1-2 on the grid.
Horrible to have the two of them wiped out in the first corner.
Yeah. Well, in fact, there was a nice video feature on Saturday on the World Superbike website just to sum up that whole situation. Let's have a listen in.
Physically, I'm more or less okay. It was a big impact. I wasn't sure when I was laying in the gravel because it takes a while until you know how you are. But I took a big impact on my leg. But thankfully, the Alpine Star boots took the brunt of it. So no further injury. I should be okay for tomorrow. But really angry with this crash because this is unforgivable from Gerloff, you know, in the first corner in a wet race like this. To come in at this angle is not really smart thinking. So he could have injured us badly and still he hasn't come to say sorry yet. So I'm still winning.
I think the pace that we had for the race was looking very, very strong. But like you said, unfortunately, there was an incident. Such a shame that both BMWs got taken out only kind of couple hundred metres after the start line. And I don't know exactly what you want me to say about it. It was a bit of a thoughtless and reckless move, really. There wasn't, the line was closed. I was looking for the cutback against Jonathan. And like I said, it's just disappointing, really. A lot of work now for the whole of the BMW Motard World Superbike team. They've certainly got a lot of work to do. And I'm not too bad. I was okay, but I know Eugene took a bit of a beating. And not much more to say. Obviously, I'm frustrated and quite angry that another rider puts me on the tarmac in turn one in wet conditions and in front of 15 to 20 other bikes. So I still need time to settle down from that, really.
Yeah, for me, I felt like I got a really, really good start, and I was closing in on everybody, and they broke more early than I was gonna break. I broke where I went, and I found the inside line, and to me, all I saw was Jonathan and myself, nobody else. And then from I feel some pressure on my boot or the side of the bike, and then it was gone. And that was it. So for me, I mean, I was almost on the paint on the inside. I feel like I was on a really good line, and then out of nowhere, felt some pressure. But I was really sad to see that when I came around the next lap to see that they had gone down, and just really unfortunate. I don't want to be involved in anything like that, and really, really sorry to those guys, hopefully everything's good.
Yeah, strong words there, you have to say, and obviously there was a very visual gesture from Sykes in front of the TV cameras as well. You get the feeling as well, Gerloff was being extra careful then, Jules, as you hinted on before that on Sunday today, just to make sure
also had a big
nothing untoward happened again
in the first race. So he's still impressed this weekend largely, but that, you know, it was it wasn't clever, but it wasn't something where I'd be going, oh my god, you know, get him up before the stewards, he needs to sort himself out. It was if you insist on racing motorcycles, this sort of thing happens.
Yeah, and he's a hard charger, and you know, if he does become a world champion one day, and remember his aim is MotoGP world champion, that'll be one of those incidents you look back at in the same way you look back at Marc Márquez incidents from the past, like when he, you know, he's had problems, but then you look back and think, oh well, you know, these things
just
do
again
happen.
Refer to the experts in the studio, Shaky Byrne and Jim Whitten said, "What's the fuss about? It was a racing incident."
Yeah. And they've been, both of them, involved in enough incidents that were and were not racing incidents. They know
that. And they will no doubt tell you they've been on both ends of that sort of situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, just before we go, Jules, let's quickly run through a few of the names we haven't talked about already and just a few words to sum up their weekends. Alex Lowes, first of all, hadn't been on the podium since Australia, and he's had two podiums this weekend, race one and the sprint race. Good job.
Yeah, like his teammate in many ways, didn't have the setup one assumes or hit problems on the much drier track.
Yeah, Alex, where was Alex in race two this afternoon? He finished in seventh place. Looks like it, doesn't it?
He started well, was looking good, and he went back a bit as he obviously struggled with setup, grip, whatever. But
Toprak Razgatioglu, like Bautista, like Laverty after the crash, of course, in race one. Well, there's someone else was struggling with injuries. I'm trying to think who it was now, but there's been quite a few injury-struck riders. You have to think Toprak's still feeling the effects of that one, don't you, from Barcelona?
But he was basically invisible for most of the weekend.
Sadly, after the heroics of Magny-Cours last year. Oh, Leon Haslam, of course, another rider who was injured. Massive crash for him when he was fighting for fifth place, let's not forget, at the end of race one, which does bring us on to Honda. Let's explain what happened there.
Well, Bautista, I can't tell you what Dennis Noyers would have said. You can imagine what I've been discussed with the great American stroke Spanish journalist once about various riders' wet weather. And he was he used a phrase I couldn't possibly use in front of my mother here or anywhere else about, I think it was Daigiro Kato and Alvaro Bautista, what was going to happen at Estoril, as I recall, if it rained. And he was right.
Really? Yeah, well, and how long ago was that?
Haslam did not get the reward for some very, very, very good work. You look how far back he was in free practice on Friday and how he improved and how he got things better and better and how competitive he was in the first race. And so unlucky to take that horrible, nasty crash right at the end of the race.
Yeah,
Leon did a cracking job this weekend and got no reward for it.
And he also, as I think back now, because it's easy to forget with so much having happened since. He just missed out on the top nine in the sprint race as well, which compromised his afternoon grid position.
No reward for cracking work for me from Leon Haslam. Exactly what you expect from Leon, of course.
Yeah, definitely been the best Honda rider of the weekend, no doubt about that. Bautista has on other occasions this year. Bautista's had the podium so far. Very evenly matched teammates, actually. Yeah. And going into Estoril with only three races to go, they are 9th and 10th in the championship with only 8 points between them. So that's going to be a great little battle going into Estoril. Awesome. Manufacturers as well, Jules. It hasn't been won by anybody other than Kawasaki since 2014 when Aprilia did the honors. Ducati haven't won since 2011. There's only 26 points between them. Kawasaki ahead of Ducati. And that's massive for these manufacturers, isn't it?
Ducati, I mean, that's the sort of thing that salves some pride in Bologna if they can advertise the fact they are the constructors' champion again.
And then just to conclude with the Supersport classes, we had a win for Andrea Locatelli on Saturday. Luca Maes, superb win in front of the French crowd on Sunday. And Locatelli doing something we do not usually see and throwing it off on the warm-up lap and unable to start the race. So that was an unfortunate one for him. Supersport 300, Geoffrey Bowes passing his teammate Scott Deroux into the last corner on Saturday to take the win. And then the afternoon race today won on Sunday. This is, of course, by Marc Garcia, the 2017 world champion. But Geoffrey Bowes extended the championship lead again. It's down to the two Dutchmen, Julian. For the first time, a Spaniard will not win Supersport 300.
And I've been, since I started commentating with you partway through this season, Greg, and knowing very little about that class, I have to say. And Bowes has been a standout for his racecraft.
Hmm. Yeah, and a quick shout-out for the Brits in these classes, by the way. Eunan McGlinchey with a broken wrist. That great shame for the Northern Irishman, the former British junior supersport champion. Best wishes, but did a great job to get into the main race for the first time, so let's see what he can do in Estoril. Hopefully, he can race there. Tom Booth Amos, you spotted the chain. Apparently, the chain did come off and caused the crash in race one. Yeah, on Saturday.
And let's not forget Carl Smith in supersport.
Absolutely, yeah.
Cracking podium finish in the second race, but like you said earlier, Mears was away with that.
Yeah, he really was, wasn't he? And Danny Webb did a good job, and so did his new teammate this weekend, Carol Haneke. Great debut for him.
I mean, we know Haneke's a class rider. He's adapting to the new class. He crashed in the soaking conditions. I mean, let's face it, historically, Carol has a Bautista-like tendency to sling it at the straw bales when things are going well. But he stayed on it today, which is Sunday, and scored a very respectable finish.
Well, there you go. Estoril and Brands Hatch. We have a real shootout for the BSB title and the World Superbike title. One of them in Kent, one of them just outside Lisbon. Not this coming weekend, but the next. And we will be back with the podcast after that amazing double weekend of bikes, that double bike bonanza on Eurosport. It's the weekend of the 16th, 17th and 18th of October. Jules will be live for free practice from Estoril on Friday the 16th. I cannot wait. We'll be back with the podcast on Monday the 19th. What's going to happen in Estoril? Who's going to win the championship?
Well, I'm not, you know, you'd be a mug to bet against Jonathan Ray, but after this weekend, I am very averse to making predictions.
Yeah, let's leave it at that. It's going to be absolutely superb. Thanks for everything across the weekend, Jules. It's been a pleasure. And we will speak with you on the podcast, of course, again on Monday the 19th of October. But don't forget to tune into Eurosport and online with the Eurosport app to follow everything as well across the weekend. We will speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win. And also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.